Bienvenidos and welcome to another episode of the Small Chops Podcast. We're here again thinking about this last year, right? Who knew that this week last year was going to be the last time a lot of you saw the sun? would be the last time a lot of us took any trips. It would be the last time a lot of us ate outside at a restaurant. Be the last time a lot of us grabbed a hot dog from somewhere, some boiled peanuts from somewhere, some candied peanuts. This week probably was the last time a lot of people didn't wear masks, really, you know? As we reflect over what has gone on in this last year, we can only be grateful for the opportunities that we've had, for the lessons that we've learned, and also keeping our prayers in mind the people that we've lost. This last year has not been an easy one, but it's definitely been a breakthrough for some people. As I continue to try to make the best of this pandemic, or, you know, what we've experienced so far, I'm trying to make the best of it in my personal life by really kind of understanding what I want, what I'm looking for, and how I can make that happen, how I can plan out the achievements that I look forward to making for myself, right? And one of those things is definitely the derivation of this podcast, or the resuscitation of this podcast. I didn't really know how I wanted it to happen, but here we are, and I'm trying to do it as consistently as humanly possible, and it's only going to go up from here. There's nothing like a trail of improvement, or a trail of like a history, for us to see how far we've come, for us to see what we've been able to achieve, and for us to see what our shortcomings and our downfalls could have been, may have been. And it's funny thinking about the whole Ted Cruz dilemma or issue that went on in Texas. I know Texas has just lifted the mandatory face covering requirement, mandate for being in public. And I'm really at a crossroads when it comes to that particular issue. On one hand, I value so highly the fact that if you still want to wear a mask, you absolutely can. You still have the right to protect yourself, protect your family. And at the end of the day, those that don't want to do it should also have that right. I think as vaccinations are coming out, and as people are, you know, looking to gamble with that method of protection, at the end of the day, there are going to be certain communities of people that, I guess, just care more about the community. And there are other people who care more about their autonomy and their right to choose. I can't say one is right. I can't say one is wrong. I do see issue with somebody not taking consideration of the public and, you know, living the life that they want to live. But I can't fault it, especially because we don't trust our government. We don't trust the statistics that are coming out. We don't trust the details that they're telling us. You know, remember, this is a scenario where they're telling you doubling or tripling a mask will probably make you more safe. It'll be more healthy for you, doubling up on a mask like that. And that was in the news not even a month ago. So yeah, at the end of the day, let people choose and give people the autonomy that America is so known for, and let the chips fall where they may. As I get into this episode, I'm taking it from a different perspective. We're always talking about relationships. We're talking about I'm talking about my personal experience in them. I'm talking about my shortcomings. I'm talking about the things that I've learned so far from the people that I've kind of broken down their lectures from. I haven't yet done any interviews, but I really look forward to that. But as of now, we're taking a lot of books and lectures, and we're kind of breaking them down and looking at them from an updated point of view, trying to see what works for us here and now, what works for us in the 21st century. Those of us that see marriages, over half of marriages in the U.S. end in divorce. We see a lot of children. We see a lot of single families. We see just a lot of single parent families. We've been dealt a pretty bad hand in this generation, and love is going to be how we improve, I think, you know, how we do better for each other, how we do better for ourselves and those that come after us. And this podcast is in that same vein. The topic today is going to be dispositions. Disposition is something that is totally self-governing. Disposition is something that can make or break a relationship, absolutely. And disposition can be blamed on the other, or it can be, you know, you can take the responsibility, the onus for your own disposition as you move forward into the relationships that you have with your coworkers, that you have with your family, that you have with your relationship partner and friends. In this episode, we talk about Manly P. Hall. And Manly P. Hall is more of an esoteric channeler, a philosopher, someone that has been able to gain insight into the hidden knowledge or some of the codified languages that are used in Western mythology and society. And we use some of the information that he has provided and we apply it to how we can make relationships better. We apply it to how we can improve ourselves in the relationship dynamic, and we apply it to how we can move forward. Stay tuned, y'all.
It is that the individual, if he knows enough and is sincere enough, will make the changes necessary to improve his own disposition.
When it comes to self-development and your own disposition, one question that needs to be asked is, which part of us is leading? Is it the best of us leading the rest of us? Is it the easiest, most convenient part of us leading the rest of us? What value do we get from our leadership? My own personal life, it's so charging whenever you hear something that really speaks to you. And this is one of those things. And it's not only hearing it, but hopefully getting it into my life to where I can either have a reminder of it, I could have a poster of these words, I could have something that triggers the reminder of who is leading me. I can say that in my past, convenience has led me, my appetite has led me in relationships, and that has led me to be exactly where I am, you know, still searching, still looking, still interested, but having very ineffective communication dynamics. And one of the causes of those is absolutely my disposition and who is leading me. Is it my irritability? Is it my grace? Is it my enthusiasm? Is it my critical nature or my critical eye or, you know, point of view? These are all things that have been in all relationships, I'm sure. But how much, right? 20% of this, 50% of that, 80% of this, 12% of that. I think it's really important for me to understand that what I lead with, especially with when it comes to confidence building, when it comes to just bonding with your person, someone that's new or old, it's really, 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 really vital to give that grace, to give that understanding, to give that benefit of the doubt. And that is something that I've never led with. That is something that is really sobering to think about. And it reminds me that my best self isn't myself that is on autopilot, right? The person that I am without careful consideration isn't the person that is too helpful or is conducive for a loving relationship. Based on my past, based on how I see the world, based on my experiences with the world, it is almost like the downfall of relationship for me to be on autopilot. It really does take thoughtfulness. It does take really being in it. It does take little reminders. It takes research, really trying to apply the information that I learn in my life. And this is one of those things, really. So knowing that I need to lead myself with a more introspective part of me, with a more thoughtful part of me, with a more contemplative part of me, isn't necessarily going to be where I want to move forward when it comes to relationships, simply because I can overthink. I can think myself out of all kinds of situations, or I can, you know, make up any one of us can. We can make up some really cockamamie situations that may or may not be accurate. and really understanding who is leading you, who is leading whenever you do have those thoughts, whenever you do see a partner, whenever you do, you know, think of them, who is leading you when it comes to that person, that union, that kinship, that relationship. Which part of you is leading?
There is really no legitimate reason why we are here if we cannot think of anything except ourselves.
Now, what I've learned is that contemplative person or that contemplative entity or part of my life that is very conducive for relationships doesn't necessarily need to be the person that's the overthinker, right? Doesn't necessarily need to be the one that is nitpicking or figuring out what this person really meant when they meant this, that, and the third. The contemplative portion of ourselves that I'm speaking of is the contemplative person that comes alive in quietude, right? That part of us that starts to move, this part of us that has a very, very quiet voice, and it can only reach us when we are in that, you know, quiet moment or quiet space. And increasing that in my life has been a challenge simply because I'm not managing my time well. You know, ideally, I would love to be able to do that first thing in the morning, you know, before I write or as I write. And it can happen. It does happen most days. And when I slip and when I, you know, don't do it intentionally, it's one of those things where you always got to get back on that horse. Having a couple of days of doing it, having that quietude in the morning time for me is definitely conducive to all the relationships that I've ever been in. And making the effort to do that is really important for me, and surrounding myself or providing myself with the tools to achieve that better part of me is super important. Achieving internal security is impossible without the guidance of the divine self. And the only way to contact that divine self is through prayer, through meditation, through intentional, like, thoughtfulness, right? There's real quietude that he speaks of. I really find that interesting because it isn't praying to someone else. It isn't asking for guidance from someone else. All of this is internal, which means all of this is a part of you. And just asking for the guidance, but not necessarily from outside, I think brings an opportunity for you to come into contact with a part of you that I have not been a part of or hasn't been a part of our lives often. And that is something that really excites me when it comes to learning what I need to learn from the sources that have best guided me through my most healthy of times, right? Those times when I am able to sit down and quietly contemplate my life, or just literally try to turn my brain off and just listen to my breath, listen to my heartbeat, listen to my body, listen to the reactions of the stimulus around me. These are the things that create that that space for that higher self to come into contact with you. And it's necessarily, for me, it hasn't been like a, hey, what's up, man? I haven't heard from you. Or, yo, what's going on? You haven't been listening to me. It's more of like, it's almost like someone throws a thought in your mind, right? It's almost, it's instantaneous. And that's one thing I love about it. It's whenever you get great ideas, whenever you get great insight, it's never something that comes, for me, it's very rarely something that comes about through like really staunch contemplation and, you know, banging my head against the wall until I come up with an idea. It's really, you know, being someplace, doing something, or thinking of another fondly, that all of a sudden an idea just pops in. And I do think that in our lives, in my life in particular, that is our higher self getting in contact with us. And the more we create that field, the more we create the healthy soil for that part of us to sprout, I think we're going to have a lot of really, really great interactions. And knowing that it isn't just to quiet the mind, knowing that it isn't just to try to, you know, blank your mind, but it's so that that part of you can have space to talk. Because the ego, the mind, is a very, very tricky master if it turns into that. But it's a much, much better servant.
It is easy, apparently, to forget anything good that ever happened to us, but never forget anything that was unfortunate.
Once alone with that quietude, once alone with that part of us that is higher than the rest of us, right? Once we're in contact with that best of us, I think that is a great opportunity for us to change what our natural responses would have been, right? So for me, having criticism is something that I'm not good at. Receiving criticism, right? Receiving critiques on, you know, why I'm doing this or why I'm doing that or how I chose this and the third. The question, of course, is never going to be, you know, met with malice. But when I just didn't do something right, or when I can do something better, when I can do something, you know, with more consideration towards another, I think these are the things that my natural response is to kind of like clam up and to be quiet. But with the help of that quietude, with the help of understanding what my natural response is, I can kind of get over the natural response, right? I can transcend it after that contemplative examination of my thoughts and my life and my responses to these people in my life that want the best for me, that are looking to, you know, improve our relationship, that are looking to see me succeed in whatever field that I'm interested in. I think these are very, very essential tools to be able to move forward, not just move forward in life, but to move to higher planes of consciousness, to be able to move towards higher levels of success in whatever endeavors we choose. It is one, having those people that want to be around you, right? Having those people that care enough about you to tell you about yourself. But not only that, not only do they give you your critiques, but they give you your flowers as well. I think many of us, I won't say many of us, I'll just speak from my own personal experience. The people that were in my life to love me only gave me the critiques. And as I get older, and as I find myself guilty of those same ways of expression, I've come to realize that it isn't about the how can I say this? It isn't about the critiques, because the person is looking at you as a stone piece, or as a solid piece of marble. And the way sculptures work is they chip away at all the quote unquote imperfections to be able to create something that is beautiful. And I think that in my life, I had a sculptor that raised me, and that sculptor only wanted to do away with the bad and never acknowledged any of the advancements or acknowledgments or flowers, really, you know what I mean? So giving those flowers isn't something that I'm naturally cognizant of or that I default to. But because of that quietude, because of being able to sit with myself and learn from things like therapy or even people that have known me long enough to know what my habits could be or my predilections or my defaults could be, was really helpful and really in discovering that that natural response can be transcended, and really understanding why we're here. Why am I bothering trying to transcend those natural responses to quote unquote negatively perceived stimuli? And what I can say is beauty at the end of the day. Beauty is why we're here. We're here to make, we're here to enjoy, we're here to revel in beauty. And I'm not just talking about people. I'm not just talking about plants. I'm just talking about the life that we can live is potentially beautiful. And somebody actually recommended I watch a movie called Life is Beautiful. And I think it's about a family in a German occupied nation or in a concentration camp. I'm not sure. I remember seeing the movie posters when I was young. I remember seeing that movie was everywhere, but I don't remember what that movie is about. It kind of reminds me of Schindler's List just from the previews. I know it's going to be a solemn movie. I don't think it's going to be, you know, entertaining, but I really look forward to it. It's called Life is Beautiful. And yeah, these are the things that we're looking for in order to grow, beautify the world, indulge in the beauty, create as much beauty as possible, repeat that beautiful, you know, creation as many times as possible, and to share that with others. It's never meant to be kept to ourselves, but really delineated throughout the world.
What part of ourselves have we elected to office as the guardian and guide of our lives?
We're here to lecture down into five parts when it comes to our disposition. The five parts are selfishness, negativity, the desire to grow, the tools with which to grow, and growth itself. I thought it'd be cool to start with selfishness simply because I think that's the one that needs the least amount of work. For me, it needs the least amount of explanation or the least amount of understanding. I find value in selfishness, but the selfishness I almost think has to be other oriented. And that's what Manly says in one of his, in one of the clips for this lecture is, there's no value in anything that is self-serving. There's no virtue in anything that isn't used to help others. There's no motive to exist, but to serve. It should be considered valuable. If it's not helping others, if it's not solving a problem that other people have, if it isn't allowing others to facilitate something a little bit easier, there doesn't seem to be any value in it. And I can kind of see that from a economic point of view, right? If you're looking to create a business, if you're looking to create a side hustle, if you're looking to strike out on your own and you know, and venture off into entrepreneurial endeavors, it's really important to find something that solves an issue for someone else. And not only does it provide you monetary value, but it's virtuous as well. Now, this isn't to say, you know, creating a selfie stick is virtuous, but really creating something that provides value unto those, something that hasn't been had before, and something that hopefully replaces something else, you know. It doesn't have to be tactical. It could be software. It could be conversations. It could be, yeah, so many different options we have. But make sure that it is other oriented. Telling stories, I know, and informing people of their history, I know. These are all service oriented activities, and I'm grateful to have people in my life that are finding success, really pursuing those endeavors.
The labors of self-centeredness, selfishness, ambition, and revenge are not part of a message that comes from the best part of ourselves. It comes from a level that is not fit to govern.
This last clip I thought was really interesting because of the words that Manly chose to put together. He spoke about self-centeredness, selfishness, ambition, and revenge. Now, I know three of those are obviously selfish, but I couldn't really get over why ambition was there. I thought of ambition as something that should be striven towards. It's something that we find success with, you know, having ambition, having that desire to be, I don't know, I didn't know what it was. Having that desire to be successful is what I thought it was. So I ended up looking up the definition of ambition. And ambition, before our modern era, made it into something positive. The actual etymology of it and the definition of the etymology goes like this. Ambition, a striving for favor, courting, flattery, a desire for honor, thirst for popularity. It's rarely used literally. It's rarely used in this sense. It's almost like nice. Nice is one of those words that if you look up the etymology of nice or the actual definition, it'll surprise you. Really. Like it caught me off guard. And I remember saying that I hate being nice. I can't stand niceties. There's no room for it. You know, pleasant. Yeah. What is that other word when you're being cordial? Yeah, there's no problem with cordiality, but nice. I had a real issue with nice, and I'm going to leave that to you to look it up. But you'll be a little surprised when you see that. Ambition is used negatively. It's usually coupled with pride, vainglory, and it's meant a little bit more than arrogance, right? So it's like I need recognition is what ambition actually was. I need to be noticed for what I'm doing. I need to be rewarded for what I'm doing, but I really need that that recognition, that thirst for popularity. And that was really surprising to me. And I guess it's a quality to have in balance, you know, with a more healthy person that has that quietude, that's been able to get in touch with their higher self and knows how to use a tool like that, ambition. But it isn't naturally something that can be utilized by me particularly. I don't find ambition useful because of what I'm doing is driven by interest. It's driven by desire more so than ambition. I'm doing the things that I'm doing because I want to do it, and I could do it for free as long as I need to do it because of the fact that I enjoy doing it, and it's not other oriented. And it's really dangerous having services that are other oriented from an ambitious standpoint, in my mind, simply because you don't want to capitulate to others. You don't want what you have to be at the mercy of others. You want to make it because it's what you want to make, and how you want to make it is because how you were able to make it, the way, you know, what brings you joy, what satisfies you. And I think ambitiousness or ambition could be really hurtful simply because it's at the mercy of the masses. I think of Wale whenever I think of ambition, not only because that was the name of one of his albums, but because I think that is what limited him from being an artist that could have been so much more. You know, not to say that he isn't a fantastic representation of the artistry of hip hop. But that ambition, I don't know if it was something that helped or hurt his career, but he is somebody that comes to mind constantly. So, yeah, the first issue with disposition is selfishness.
Most of the influences that affect disposition come from the outside. On the daily pattern of living, we are all upset and worried and frightened. And we are all trying desperately to succeed, even if it is at the expense of principles or each other.
Negativity is the next portion that we're talking about. And this flows so perfectly with that ambitious portion of the lecture. In this last clip, he talks about how we're all scared and desperate to succeed. And we'll do that even at the expense of others. How often have you heard, yo, man, I'm just doing my job. Hey, man, I got to feed my family. Yo, you know, it's not me. It's the rules. I'm just trying to follow the rules. I'm just doing what I'm told. These are all really poisonous excuses for a lot of the harm, a lot of the issues that have gone on in our culture and our society and in the history of the states in particular, because that's the history I know. That negativity is poisonous. And I can absolutely say with 100% certainty that I've drunk a lot of that Kool-Aid. I've been a really, really negative person. And it hasn't led to a lot of positive experiences. It's led to me avoiding a lot of experiences. I think that that has been detrimental to my development. At least it retards my growth by, you know, me convincing myself that this risk or this opportunity isn't worth it, that that way of looking at the world doesn't behoove me for whatever reason. So negativity was something that I absolutely struggle with. And it's really, yeah, it doesn't lend well to a positive person at all. When you always see all the issues with society, with politics, with medicine, with food, with diet, with exercise, with social environments, all these different things, then where are you supposed to go? How are you supposed to enjoy this world when you're only looking at that? I think, as I say about every episode, life is a paradox. It's both and. It's a double-edged sword. Everything that you can enjoy can be used to your detriment. Everything that happens to you that's negatively impacting your life can be used as a launching pad for success, for growth, for development.
That we must learn to forgive instead of revenge. That we must learn to be kind instead of critical.
Even if that person is correct, even if that negative person is pointing out accuracies in the world, it doesn't lend toward that person being more positive in the world, right? Again, going back to that sculpture analogy, is, you know, removing all the negativity or paying attention to the negativity doesn't create a beautiful object in the end. You don't pay attention to all the beautiful things that are happening in the world and to yourself, and it's a really, really tough place to be. To get out of that space, to get out of that negativity, there has to be a better understanding of the world, or at least a curiosity to understand the world. Because, you know, going back to Ye said, ain't nothing on the news but the blues. And that's something that negatively impacts all of us. You just don't know how to reconcile those, opposing forces when you're constantly reminded of what is so negative in your life. But learning why, learning that negativity is a part of life, right? Learning the Buddhist tradition that life is suffering. No, learning that all of these religions in the world never tell you how to get rid of suffering. They definitely almost guarantee that you will suffer, but they give you a vantage point of how to see that suffering, how to see that negativity. And also, you know, put that in your mind as something that is side by side with a lot of things that are going well in the world, with a lot of positivity that's going on in your own particular life.
And the individual gets into a kind of panic. He gets his nervous system all disturbed. He gets a little short in his attitudes towards other people. He nurses more grudges. He condemns more politicians and miscellaneous people. He finds something wrong with just about everything. Now, he may be right, but this endless finding of wrong is going to damage him.
Reveling or constantly thinking about all those negative aspects of the world and of life and of, you know, your experience here on this planet will damage the man eventually. As you heard in that last clip, it's nothing healthy. It doesn't lead to anything that, you know, can be improved upon. And it really, you know, whatever you focus on expands. That's some of these like new age teachings. One of the things that really damages somebody is grievance, right? When someone's wronged you and you hold on to that, there is nothing more poisonous to your state of being, to your mental health, and to those around you than just kind of that attachment to those grievances and, you know, how you've been wronged in the world. And you forget all the positive things that have happened to you because of these grievances. And I don't know why that is human nature. You know, a room would be totally clean, but there would be one spot on the floor that's like, you know, one speck of dirt or something like that. And for whatever reason, we just focus on that particular piece. We focus on that little thing that isn't in line with the rest. And I don't think that's upbringing. I think that really is just human nature. We have a long way to go when it comes to defaulting to positivity. But for now, I think it's really important for us to focus on intentionally rearranging our minds, intentionally putting things in our life, plants, books, podcasts, reminders of any sort, to look at things that look at things that bring joy to your life. Look at things that are beautiful, to remind you to refocus. And even if you do, you know, default to negativity, that's fine. That's what we do. But really consciously rearranging that mind, consciously giving yourself a couple seconds to say, yo, you know what? I don't need to look at it this way. I need to turn my gaze over here. I need to look at these values. It's something that is really huge, and I think that all people can benefit from. I know I'm guilty of that as well. Like, this is all personal. You know what I mean? This negativity part is me for sure.
There is nothing that drops us into neurasthenia more easily than a constantly negative attitude on something. Criticism ends in a definite psychosis, and it becomes chronic, and it will gradually result in early senility of the involved person.
This last clip that Manly spoke about is the last point that I want to make when it comes to negativity. And the word that he chose to use is neurasthenia. And it is defined as an ill-defined medical condition characterized by lassitude, fatigue, headache, irritability, and associated chiefly with emotional disturbance. So again, that disposition, right? That choosing to rearrange the mind, that choosing to change your gaze, that choice is magic, I think. And there's not much to say about that last clip, but he really broke that down well, I think.
So the problem of getting around this business of dispositions is to recognize the disposition not as a disaster, but as a challenge. And also, for once and for all, get over the idea that our disposition has been adversely affected by other people. Other people can do what they can to make us uncomfortable sometimes, but they cannot reach us if we are solidly established in principles within ourselves. We can take whatever they say and take it in kindness.
Growth is the section I'm most excited about because these are the things that I'm really actively trying to pursue. I'm actively finding value in growth and finding value in how to grow, right? Effort to improve disposition is hugely beneficial, not only to me, but to all involved. I'm noticing my disposition in the workplace. I'm noticing my disposition with my neighbors. I'm noticing my disposition with, you know, whoever I'm courting at the time. And to have a natural disposition that's positive is something that definitely starts from within. And really putting in that effort, that sincere search, will grant me the access to that improved life. And even if I'm not interested in improving, even if I'm not interested in putting in the growth and effort to improve my disposition, nature is going to do it for me, right? Nature is going to, you know, show me that I need discipline, that I need structure. Nature is going to show me that I need other people in my life, that I need to be kind to my neighbors, that I need to be more forgiving, that I need to have grace when it comes to not just the waiters or, you know, the people that are in the service industry or, you know, the frontline workers, but really those people that are close to me, really giving the grace to those that I am close with and not just taking that disappointment to heart, not just wanting to put space between me and someone that I care about simply because of a disappointment or of any kind of like grievance that they've created in my life.
If you change the outside, there is no proof that it's going to change the inside. The individual who changes his standard of living, moving upward into a more luxurious environment, does not inevitably become a better person. In fact, he becomes more inclined to be a less sufficient person. The more he has, the more the temptations build. And no amount of external success assures the person of a good life.
This clip was so huge to me because it talks about something that our society, on a worldwide scale, really missed the mark on, right? Change on the outside doesn't mean you're a better person. And in fact, he goes so far as to say it makes it even more difficult for you to achieve those things. I had a conversation with somebody just last night about, you know, my time spent, about, you know, my day-to-day activities and what I want for my life and how I can improve my disposition. And it's so interesting because, you know, when you're working a job and you're making X amount of dollars, and let's say you've been working that job for a couple of years, let's say you're looking to make more money because you're looking to have more access to things and maybe not just the material world, but, you know, you want to get better, you want to get further in your career. And asking myself, why do I want to be further in that particular career? Does it bring me joy? Is it something that I think is going to help others? What is the value of providing that focus, that effort into gaining more success, into gaining another position, into getting a raise and things like that? And he reminded me that the more you get, the more difficult it becomes to do without. And wow, if that wasn't so very personal. And this person didn't know anything about my podcast. This person didn't know anything about Manly P. Hall or my discussions that I, you know, plan to have today. But he literally told me that, if you want to make a life-changing decision, what are you waiting for? Like, what's stopping you? And wow, that temptation to make more, that temptation to attain more, more physical, more material things, honestly, at the end of the day is the driving force for this attainment of a new, you know, position or a new title or something like that. And that makes it so much more difficult to indulge in that quietude, to find that person within me that is going to be my guiding light, to really get in touch with the best of me to govern the rest of me, is exceedingly more difficult when that part of me that is focused on achieving personal or material success, ambition is in the driver's seat. I really, 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 really resonated with that last clip. And I don't know how to get around it. It was not an easy decision. And it does take a lot of effort. It does take a lot of focus and concentration. Manley didn't just say in this last clip to be kind. He said to learn forgiveness and kindness. Really kind of do the research, do the personal activities, put yourself in positions where you have to be kind, where you have to choose forgiveness, and stick with that choice, stick with that decision. And it becomes easier, but it's absolutely still a challenge. It's just like working out a muscle. This kindness muscle that I got, mad atrophied. This forgiveness muscle that I have, oh man, let me tell you, it definitely needs some, it needs some testosterone, it needs some GHB, some human growth hormone. What is it? HGH, not GHB. Jesus Christ. Is that a drug? GHB is a drug. No, HGH. Let's talk about just a really putting in that effort, putting in that work, just like going to the gym, the mental gym, the emotional gym, and exercising those parts of me that I know have atrophied because A, I've been on my own and I haven't really put myself in positions where I need to ask for someone's forgiveness or I need to offer kindness. And that is to my detriment. That's why I'm at this age now and I feel like I've achieved not as much as I'd like to. And I think that this is a great, great way for me to move forward in my life, in my self-development and my purpose and towards the goals that I do want for my life. Like we said earlier, the disposition cannot be blamed on the outside of us. We work until inside is replying to whatever negative stimulus with love. Really important to react with love. And that isn't always the initial reaction. That isn't always the natural reaction. That's not your default. That's not my default. But working on that muscle creates that possibility to lessen the time it takes to switch from negative to positive. At the end of the day, that negativity is still going to come up. It's still going to arise in me, especially. And it'll take me about a day to come to my senses, to realize the value of forgiveness and kindness and try to offer that. And I'm trying to get it down to about an hour. So from a day to an hour is what my goal is for this next year. And from an hour to 5 minutes or to half an hour. Well, let's just get down to an hour first.
If we want to do something, if we really love humanity, we will go out and help someone. We won't just simply do the same old things we've always done and feel that the attitude is sufficient. It is not. No virtue is really a proven virtue until it is used to do something that brings joy, comfort, peace, or security to others.
Now on this road to self-improvement, what happens, right? What happens to those of you that, you know, choose to put in kindness, choose to not take advantage of others, but choose to default as much as you can to grace and forgiveness? It's Manly P says it best. He said, someone places rocks in the way when you're getting somewhere. And that's just what life is. Difficulties come with growth. I think of plants and, you know, planting a seed and how difficult it must be not only to break through the shell of a seed and to grow roots, but to push through soil in order to get to sunlight. That growth is extremely difficult, but very necessary for that plant to develop and to, you know, yield fruit at the end of the day, or flowers, or just to live, you know. That growth is very necessary. And those obstacles are very much a part of that growth. Who knows why, you know? Maybe if it's easy, we wouldn't do it. If everyone did it, we wouldn't value it as much as we do. But really making that desire or really making that that decision to push forward is always gonna have some setbacks. It's always gonna come with difficulties. And I think leaning on others, leaning on your understanding and trusting that part of you that is, you know, guiding you for that kind of success and breakthrough.
Within the individual, is a great universal mystery, a mystery that we were created to solve, a way of life which we must find and live with to fulfill our destiny. Once you decide to live a better life, you have to stay with it, because if you fail it, it was worse than it was before.
Growth and keeping with that momentum is absolutely one of the most difficult things. I just spoke about earlier how often I write and how much I want to do it in the morning time, not just write, but meditate. How much I want to have that quietude in my daily life, and having that structure is really amazing. And when you know what you've learned when it comes to disposition and you're using it to your benefit in your life, it is very, very important to keep with it. I don't know why, but Manly said in this last clip that it's almost worse if you stop it. It's almost worse if you know it and then you decide to stop it. Your life is going to be a lot more difficult. Your life is going to have a lot more challenges than if you didn't even know this information or didn't have that path set out for you. But once you know better, you got to do better. And that is one thing that I pulled from this clip. And I think that's super major, super important.
There was an old saying that was quite prevalent in India and among some of the schools that originated in India, that when the individual really was determined to do right, all his old bad karma was dumped on him at once. Because it seems that no one puts the rocks in the way of someone who isn't going anywhere. But the moment you go somewhere, you have to use resources that have strength behind them.
Lastly, we talk about the tools for growth. We talk about how, what we use, and from where do we get these inspirations? Where do we get these tools? Where do we get this access to growing properly? And one thing that I've knocked in my adult years is religion. And as I get older, I start to understand that it has its place, right? It isn't the absolute end all and be all, but it is very important for us to develop that kind of integrity. That religious integrity is important to keep for the success of your community, for the success of your personal growth. It is really, really important. Now, do you need to believe that, you know, Lazarus? Do you need to believe the story of Lazarus? Do you need to believe the walking on the water to calm the storm? There are a lot of things that you don't necessarily need to believe in order to enjoy and indulge in the integrities of religion. But I absolutely believe that we are faulty creatures, but having that desire to achieve and desire to maintain that integrity is vital, is super important. One of the other tools that we need to use is quietude, like I said earlier, really being able to be governed by that part of you that is a little bit more subtle, that part of you that knows a lot more than your loud thinking mind, right? Empty vessel makes the most noise. And that monkey brain is really, really a noisy character. And once we can quiet that down, once we can kind of give it a task to just listen to our breathing, to pay attention to the inhale and exhale, pay attention to the sensation in your nostrils. Pay attention to how your heart beats on your exhales. How your heart beats intensify on your exhales. How you can really feel it on your inhales, actually, right? When you feel your lungs, when I feel my lungs, I can feel my heart beat a lot more. Just really being cognizant of those things and being still is vital.
Well, many people, guarding their own troubles and their own misfortunes and their own weaknesses, when challenged, just say, leave me alone. Let me rest. I don't want to work. I don't want to change. I just want other people to do what I want them to.
Control over attitude that disturb your disposition. Control over our emotions. Control over our reactions. Control over our view of the world, right? Really reorganizing your thoughts, your actions to be more in line with that part of you that you want to see come to fruition. And that control is absolutely necessary. That choice of, yeah, this is what I've done. This is what I always do. Let me choose to do and be something different. Let me choose and be something greater. And that allows you the access to more options, which, again, is another growth tool. So really having that control and discipline. At the end of the day, discipline in life to think, live, and be better are vital for this kind of growth, for this kind of disposition adjustment. Manifest in daily life, quote unquote, symptoms of the things you should be doing, and a daily outlet for something that satisfies the inner soul, the inner life, the inner being of you. These two were really, really important for me, because I think that allows me to stay in that momentum. That allows me to stay in that mode of positivity, that mode of godliness, that mode of integrity, that mode of a positive disposition for me and those around me, is to really try to get myself daily, not just reminders, but activities, actions, daily rituals, whatever I can make a positive habit out of, I need to start integrating that. So if it's listening to, you know, a couple of songs in the morning time, whether it's listening to Les Brown in the morning time, whether it's listening to nothing at all, just something that's going to provide me that access or that symptom of doing the things that I should be doing. So writing down a couple of podcast ideas, writing down what I would like to accomplish in that day, I think is another avenue of manifesting those symptoms. And that outlet, that creative expression, that outlet, that thing that makes your heart sing, that things that make your soul dance, is super important as well. And I find that to be in sharing the research that I've done, really and I need to do it in a more constructive manner. I need to do it in a more organized manner, but really kind of providing that insight into human behavior that reflects my behavior, and, you know, letting you know, as my audience of whoever it is, that I am a work in progress, and I really, really look forward to listening to myself 5 years from now and thinking about all the things that I found important and relevant to my life and the things that I wanted to achieve, and then seeing myself 5 years from now doing those things. I can't wait for future me to enjoy all the spoils of what present me is working towards.
So if we want to do something, to learn something, learn how to talk with a neighbor from another land. Try to understand life, and having learned some of the language, maybe go and visit the country. This is an opportunity to open doors to friendship. There is nothing competitive about learning another language. We either have aptitude or we don't. But whatever it is, we can do something to bring each other together.
And something like education, right? Really learning the things that create that community. Learning the things that interest you, to be able to find those other people that have that common interest, whether it's travel. And if it's travel, really learning another language. Learning another language so you can share cultures with somebody else is something that is probably one of my favorite activities in this world that I've experienced thus far. Having that language exchange, having that cultural exchange, putting yourself in a subordinate position to be in someone else's culture, right? Not just, you know, if you're living in the States, going to Chinatown or going to Little Italy or going to Jamaica or, you know, Jamaica Bronx or something like that, but really going to that other culture. Experiencing that culture in its natural state, in its natural location, sharing with the people there, because everyone loves a tourist one way or the other, whether it's for financial gains or whether it's just to have a conversation in another language, whether to share with somebody that is different from me. I was listening to, was it this lecture? They talked about, you know, imagine yourself living in a small town. Now imagine that small town having a train that runs by it, and maybe once or twice a week that train brings somebody that's not from that town, and maybe not everyone in that town is eager to have a conversation with that person, but there are always going to be a few people that would love to just listen to what the world sounds like, what the world is outside of that town. And I am definitely one of those people. I really am eager to see what the rest of the world is, to see how I can improve my personal culture by taking and choosing from all these other cultures that I've been exposed to make me a better person, right? So having lime with my water is something that I'm always going to do, that I pulled from a culture here. Having a multitude of different influences in my life that have provided me with almost my own culture that is an amalgamation of all these others that I've been exposed to is something that is so fulfilling, that is a great conversation piece, and it's something that other people can pull from, because it's not where you take it from, it's where you take it to. And with that, I want to conclude this episode of Breaking Down Dispositions by Manly P. Hall. it is something that is very much worth revisiting. I highly suggest, if you're interested in any of these topics, to check him out on YouTube. He has a lot of lectures. He has a lot of books. The Secret Teachings of All Ages is the book that I most covet from him, and I was really fortunate to have my own copy of that book, and I can't wait to get back to it. But for now, really kind of adjusting the inside to reflect the outside that we desire, right? Finding value in each other and finding value in practicing those things that are really difficult, rewiring this natural disposition and improving upon that. There's no reason not to be willing to work towards something for yourself and for others. It's another thing to have ambition to be recognized by others. Really kind of knowing those differences and moving forward with that knowledge is very, very important for us in our self-development. And I hope that we can move forward with these lessons. Effable.co, EFFABL.co. That is my Instagram handle, as well as the website where you'll find this podcast. You can find me on Twitter at EFFABL. And you'll find a lot of other information that I choose that I look forward to providing for you in the near future. And these podcasts will be available on Sundays, most Sundays, as close to Sunday as humanly possible. Thanks again. You listen to the Small Chops podcast, and we'll talk to you in a week.
And we do have ways of getting away from the parts of ourselves that we can't get along with very well. We can get our minds off of ourselves. The individual who is all wrapped up in himself has been described as a very small package, and that's what he is. It is perfectly possible for us to become so much more interested and involved in important things that we have no longer time to spend all our energy trying to please our own egos.